Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Back and about 5 minutes in to hour three, and Andy Serling is joining us from the New York Racing Association, and the first order of business is to congratulate Andy on the honor that will be bestowed on him August 17th at the Chaplaincy's annual brunch for his ongoing commitment and service to the work that the Chaplaincy under Umberto Chavez's direction. Andy, what a wonderful honor. Congratulations.
Thanks. I promise to keep my speech shorter than that.
Yeah. are you going to pull
a warning that anybody that might think meeting would happen. Thank you. I appreciate it.
No, it's...
I appreciate the Chaplaincy and all they do. It's very... I'm very honored. I truly am, and I hope I'm deserving. I'd like to think I'm deserving. I hope I am. And, I don't think any of us are as deserving as people on the backstretch and all the, all that they do. So that people like you and I can earn a living in horse racing.
Yeah. The Chaplaincy.
The great game that it is, So I think, they're the New York Racetrack Chaplaincy and also around the country as well. But, it's the last thing any of us should do is tell people they should be giving or anything. But if people are in a position to give and looking for worthy causes, the Chaplaincy is a great cause to give to, whether it's in New York or even somewhere else, but, more in the jurisdiction you're in. But, also Best on the Backstretch, Development Child Care Association, these organizations that, that look after the welfare of people is a very positive thing. But I am deeply honored, and I appreciate it. Thanks to you.
No, I every opportunity I get, I'm happy to, to pay tribute to what the Chaplaincy does, and it works, it works so anonymously at racetracks around the country, and I will be honest, I wasn't really that aware of their presence until I met Salty Roberts, who effectively founded the Chaplaincy. And from that point, have really, been eager to shine a spotlight on what they do. And in New York, got very, very close, to Nick Karras, when I was working on with the barbecue and we'd have a backstretch lunch before the meet opened. Whenever we had something to give to Nick, we would. And they just do an amazing job at every level, looking after the kids and when it comes to dependency issues and just all the things that, that a faith-based charity can do. And it's particularly difficult, you would think, the mission that's on the backstretch. So RTCANY.org is the New York Racetrack Chaplaincy, and RTCANational.org is the national. Whenever, they sometimes, Andy, don't get mentioned as often when it comes to, the potential places to contribute to charitable, charitable giving. Well, there's a couple of the options. Andy, on the racing front, we just had Dr. Palmer. We talked about this pilot project on the with the Stride Safe project on the racing front, though, some thoughts about the weekend and
Well, we had had a track, you know, for what have we? I think we've had three cancellations. I think that we've run 13 days. Just coming back from our holiday break, and I mean, I think the real story of the racing is that it's been a gold rail for, I'm going to guess, 10 of the days. I mean, I could look through my track trends. It might be 9, it might be 12, but it's not a low number. And I think that's, you know, that's been the single biggest factor in our racing. And it's unusual because I know we've had some weather for sure, but it's kind of persisted, whether wet or dry. And it's, you know, it's having a dramatic effect on the racing. And I mean, First Constitution's a nice horse, but, you know, you're seeing him, you know, win by 100 lengths and sort of separate himself in the field, run 100 fire. You know, it's probably a number that could have been higher, if anything. And, you know, you see horses like What Do You Think, you know, running a 104 buyer on the gold rail. And, you know, you're seeing claimers like a horse that won earlier in the card on Saturday at a 93 buyer and run 108.9, which I don't know has happened in January in a long, long time. You're seeing the racetrack having a far bigger effect on the results than the horse is running. And that's never a good thing. I mean, that's just a fact. You know, David Aragona put up some stats from the races over the weekend. In 2 or 3 days of racing, just, you know, the vast majority of races being won by the horses that ran the least amount of distance. And exaggerated figures, that Bond horse winning up the rail with Trevor on Sunday, you know, running 20 points higher than it ran when it won by 12 and a half lengths the time before. And people think that figure was too low the time before, then they should take a look at how the horse out of that race ran in the first race, a race won with a 34 buyer. And, you know, while the nice performances in the Regal Park, I think it was, the race we ran on Saturday, also was canceled the last Saturday, but the winner on the rail, angled out at the 8th pole,
right.
Second horse on the rail every step of the way, you know, running figures in the high 70s. So, you know, that's the, you know, when you see figures that are significantly higher than is reasonable to expect, when you're seeing, you know, those kind of stats from Trackus, that the horses that are dominating the races are the ones that are running the least amount of ground. You look at some races, the horses run 1, 2, 3. You look at like a backstretch photo of them from the head on, they're the three horses on the rail, you know, bang, bang, bang. So it's, you know, positively affecting horses are staying inside and negatively affecting horses that are outside. And it's just been an extreme bias, and it's unusual in New York. You know, we just don't see it that often, especially for a prolonged period. And I know there's, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions about the inner track being some speedway. And that, maybe that was the case in the 70s and 80s, but it really was, you know, some points, I don't really know. But it's never been that strongly the case when I was playing there in a serious manner. So, you know, a lot of myths about racetracks that are true. I know that's shocking to you. But, so, you know, any results we're having, you know, you think of Magic Circle, and she may be a very nice horse for Rudy, and I don't believe she's ultimately a 9-furlong horse, even though she's disproven that notion in her last couple races. But I think, you know, she's just sort of carried along by the racetrack on Sunday, and I'm not trying to knock her, but kind of 80 buyer, and, you know, riding an extreme bias. You know, we'll see where she ends up going and how she ends up faring in bigger races going forward. You know, it's a funny three-year-old. The three-year-old divisions are very strange right now, right? Because from the filly standpoint, it's kind of Echo Zulu and a whole lot of slow horses. And, I mean, the three-year-old colts, I don't think it's unfair to say it's basically in disarray at this point. You've got a number of horses that at this point are completely ineligible to run in the Derby. And in all likelihood, unless their connections do something to change that, they're not going to have any points and they're not going to be able to run. So, you know, the favorite to Southwest, trained by Bob Baffert, that horse is not eligible to receive points. So two things happen. You know, if that horse wins, you have a horse that's gotten no points that in theory is a qualified horse to run the Derby, but also it's denying other horses the opportunity to get points. So there's two things at play, and I think the latter is something that hasn't been brought up. And so that, besides the fact that Jack Christopher was clearly the fastest two-year-old, but we don't know how far he wants to go. We need to be skeptical of that. And even his trainer said he's, you know, has his reservations about whether or not he could make the Derby anyway. So after that, Mo Donegal, I think, is running next week in the Holy Bowl. And he and Zandon, who both went off at pretty fair prices at 23 and 25 to 1 in the last Derby pool. I would have bet Zandon if I had noticed that and a couple dollars on him. But I mean, I don't think anybody's considering them world beaters, but they're right up there at the top of the heap. Because at least they can get Derby points, right? And the Clemson was actually a pretty strong race. And believe it or not, I don't believe in the voodoo that other people believe in. If you run the Remsen, it ruins your career. I know the honor code didn't believe that either. But, I mean, you look at it. Where are we, right?
Yeah.
A lot of horses winning races not getting points. And a lot of horses winning races with figures that aren't getting anybody excited. I mean, the Cop wasn't a terrible race. But I don't think anybody saw the Cop said, oh, there's my Derby horse. You know. Which is good. I mean, it's not helpful to anybody to be deciding they have a Derby horse in January or February or necessarily even March for that matter. But I don't think it's unfair to say this 3-year-old Derby picture right now is in total disarray. Some people will say I find that uninteresting. I don't. I find it much more interesting because it opens it up for the possibility of lots of horses. I think it makes the races important, makes them interesting, but you know, the specter of the Baffert situation hanging over it, that's really a big story.
Yep. Yep.
And unless something changes there, and Churchill came out pretty strongly and said that they're not going to change, I don't see how, you know, unless owners make a decision that they don't seem to want to make, and it's their money and their horse, they can do whatever they want. We're not qualifying an awful lot of horses to the Derby. Now, at the end of the day, the points don't matter as much as I think people think. I think we saw last year or something. I think horses getting with pretty minimal amounts of points.
20.
But unless there are trainer changes made pretty soon, they're just some of the better horses might not be allowed to run. And I'm sorry, but I don't think if those decisions haven't been made, you know, in April, that suddenly they're going to say, oh, yeah, we changed the trainer, you know, a week before. Oh, he can run. Well, he has no points. And, you know, there are going to be some interesting stories coming out at some point, right?
You would imagine. And, of course, the hearing mentioning Baffert, I haven't had a chance to talk about yesterday's first day. It's going to be probably a three-day hearing. But
no idea how long it's going to be.
They anticipated 3 days.
No, I don't think anyone knows how long it's going to be, Steve. Yeah. We can probably edit that.
We'll see what direction that takes. And I'm glad you mentioned the closing of that second pool, because I did not get a chance really to touch on it. You know, one thing, Andy, about that that surprised me was, Chad Brown's been very upfront about where he is with Jack Christopher, and yet he ended up closing as the third price among individual horses.
Well, I understand that Matthew Smack made Smile Happy the favorite, but he's the most ridiculous 8-1 I've ever seen. The idea that he's 8-1 about Donegal and Zandon are 23 and 25-1 is asinine. I mean, he's three times as likely to win the Derby as they are.
Yeah, I agree.
Three times more likely to win the Derby than he is. How's that?
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not saying that they should be significantly less. He just should be significantly higher. And I understand that, you know, it's probably one wager that dramatically affected that. But I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, I don't think Smile Happy is. I mean, listen, he's in the top 10 right now, I guess, right?
Yep.
I mean, you know what the heck that top 10 is, right?
Yeah.
How do you even judge you the top 10 on?
Exactly.
Well, seriously. I mean, is Corniche in the top 10? Not in mind.
Not right now. Right. Not right now, he's not. No.
You know, I mean, anybody that's betting money on Corniche in the Derby, I think it's crazy. First of all, he's not winning the Derby, but second of all, he can't even run as of now.
Exactly.
And, I've done a lot of stupid things in betting horses. I've never bet horses that, you know, aren't allowed to run.
And speaking, by the way, of bets that drive, you know, can drive the price down, Tis the Bomb ended up being the second choice, also, of course, McBee. Well,
call me. You can get 2 points higher from me.
Well, there's a good cause involved.
150 to 1, maybe 1,000 to 1.
Well, Brooke Smith. Well,
he's very good, and he'd have to be better on dirt than he is on turf.
It's a fun. It was strictly a fundraising concept. $10,000 bet.
Fundraising for everybody else to bet the pool.
Don't be like that.
Besides putting money in the people's pockets who bet the pool to win, I'm making fun of something wonderful. Was it for the kids?
You are. Brooke Smith of Rocket Ship Racing, he put down $10,000, and if 'Tis the Bomb should win the Derby, the money would go to the Backside Learning Center at Churchill.
That's wonderful. And I'm sure he's a supporter of it as well. He wouldn't have done something like that if he isn't a supporter of it as well.
Yeah, it's nice.
The important things with things like that, while kidding aside, is that they draw attention to these places.
Exactly.
It's not a question. And as a result of that bet, I imagine that there were some donations made to the Backside Learning Center. And in fact, I think I'll make one myself, especially because I made fun of it to begin with. All kidding aside, that's the important thing with things like that. It's not, you know, it's a very nice gesture of his or theirs or whomever, but also to bring attention to a positive thing like that is never a bad thing. Nonetheless, he's not winning the Derby, with all due respect.
He might win the 3-year-old turf race.
Pretty good pace to close into in that race in California, no?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair, but I mean, listen. Modern games, in the pantheon of that ilk is pretty good of recent vintage, right? Yeah.
Okay.
A quick rundown here. Smile Happy went off at 8 to 1. 'Tis the Bomb 10 to 1. Jack Christopher 14 to 1. Chasing Time 17, as well as Emmanuel, who took a ton of money.
Jack Christopher 14 to 1 is idiotic, as you pointed out.
It's very odd that people lined up for that.
Was in the pool. I'm curious what price 'Tis the Bomb would have been if he hadn't bet 10,000.
Well, you're good at that. That is not my strength. I think there was 300. How much was it? 300. The pool actually took a nice number. It was up fairly significantly. Let me see. I think I have that.
What's the payout?
361,000 was the handle.
How much?
361,000.
And what's the takeout?
Probably 20. Was it 22, 24? In California, in Kentucky, WynnBET is 16?
What did you say, 360 was bet?
361,000.
So around 60,000 came out in takeout. So there's 300,000 bet, and you said he was, what, he left 10 to 1? It was 100, so it went up, so the guy's going to win $100,000. So he cut it down to the third of the pool. So, excuse me, so the horse was 15 to 1 or something before he bet?
That sounds about right.
Well, it means that there's $20,000. So yes, around 15,000 bet. So he was 15 to 1 without his bet.
I guess so.
Wow. I gotta start looking at those pools. I gotta start making book on those pools. What I gotta start doing.
Well, I don't know if you saw my tweet exchange. I put up on Sunday morning. I gave everybody a reminder, and I showed them I did the screen capture from the thing I put at Derby Trail that showed what the prices were going into Sunday, and somebody said worst bet in all of racing, and
the pool, the Derby
pool.
Well, no, there's probably worse bets out there. The High Five, that was set up for the CAW players, that's probably a worse bet.
I had a pretty good comeback. Well, it is a fun bet. I completely agree. Well, and did you see...
You're spending hours studying... Listen, whatever makes people happy in racing is fine with me.
Exactly.
And if you're making substantial bets relative to, even to what you normally bet, I wouldn't recommend doing that. But betting 20s to 50s on some horse you like, if you think,
exactly.
You know, I might have bet $20 or $30 on Zandon if I had noticed he was 25-1. Because I'm not sure he's really supposed to be more than 25 or 30-1 right now. Most,
right.
I mean, with all due respect to Tis the Bomb, the idea that he was going to be half the price of Zandon is silly. He can't be twice as likely to win that race as Zandon. He can't be. It's not possible. He might win it. But he's not twice as likely right now to win it than the horse that ran out and went a 90 buyer that got interfered with and would have won the race if he hadn't been, you know, almost knocked over by the negligent rider on the other horse. So that's sort of crazy.
Well, my response.
Have a horse you follow, and he's 40-1, and you're a fan, and you want to bet $20.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. That's a fun bet. You're allowed to. People do bet for fun. A lot of people bet for fun.
I completely agree, and I'm the exact same. I have the exact same mentality toward it, and I've hit a pair of Oaks futures that. I tell this story. Tina and I were driving back, and it must have been, you know, Saturday night at about 10 o'clock. We probably were in Columbus or north of Columbus. And I go to look at my account, and there's like $1,500 more than I expect.
Oh, it's a Red Horse story. I was wondering where we're going with this story.
Well,
not just a Red Horse story, but it's a Red Horse story of you and Tina driving in Ohio. I mean, I think that's ground we've never covered before.
Well, I like to take you new places.
The unfortunate thing about the pools is that they've never found a way to open it
yes.
up to more mattress.
Yeah.
That's the unfortunate thing about the pool.
I would ask John Asher this every year. So this was a pet project to Steve Crist, right? Steve would write about it every year.
It's 2022. I understand that we're all still living somewhere in the 1930s. And, you know, listen, there's something to be said for that. Nobody stormed the Capitol in the 30s, did they? So, you know, it's fair, but I think it just would be better. You think, because I'll tell you something else, there are a lot of people out there. There are people out there. A lot, whatever, who have weird horses. They're like, well, I don't want to bet. I'm not going to bet on the pool, the field, but I got some stupid idea. I'm sure there are people that wish they could have bet Justify. That heard of Justify. Now, most of the time, they're throwing their money away on those unraced horses, you know?
Yep.
There are people who bet Charlatan. And, you know, and he wouldn't want the Derby anyway. But regardless, but, you know, you'd like the pool to be opened up to more horses. And I think it's time in 2022 to find an answer to that. That I think.
Well, Steve had the answer.
You should find a way to open up to more betting interest. That's all.
Well, Steve had the answer, 15 years ago. If they can program for a pick three and for three digits, and how can they not give us 100 horses? Or all horses? Every registered three-year-old. Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Calling it the worst bet, but we live in the land of the worst and the best, right? And we live in a land of a lot of, you know, sort of the worst disqualification I've ever seen, you know, that. You know, the best horse I've ever ridden. You know, all that crap. The best horse I've ever trained. You know, the best horse, the best three-year-old, the best filly of all time. You know, all that crap. You know, excessive superlatives. It's not a bet that I'm particularly interested in making, but the beauty of horse racing is there's a lot of bets available every single day. There's something for everyone.
Exactly. Well, and did you happen to see the football future bets that Marty McGee is sitting on?
Not only didn't I see them, I don't care.
Well, but it speaks to...
I wish Marty all the best, but honestly, Steve, I don't care.
All right. He got...
I did watch Mr. Self-Immunized lose, so that was good. I did enjoy that. And I did actually watch on Sunday. I did get home for the...
It was entertaining.
Crazy. It was obviously entertaining. Yeah, for sure.
I do want to ask you. I know last night you were on pins and needles. You couldn't sleep thinking about the Pegasus draw.
The dog draw.
What is
I'm confused. Somebody told me that they've renamed the Fred Hooper the charlatan.
I saw Ray Pollock tweeted
now,
about that.
On the website and in the condition book, it's listed as the Fred Hooper. I didn't know
maybe,
Ray said anything about it. Somebody else told me about it.
Yeah, Ray tweeted about it.
They didn't really change the name of the Fred Hooper, the charlatan, did they?
Maybe it's you know, sponsored by charlatan who's standing at Hillendale.
That's okay. The Fred Hooper sponsored by charlatan is okay.
Yeah, that would be all right. But yeah, well, you know my feelings.
We've all, Ira included, had plenty of sponsors.
But I need sponsors. Not a fan of paving over names.
I think that ancient title becoming. I've said it a million times. You know, the Xavier Sprint Championship is a disgrace.
Yeah,
and I don't like that they changed Lay's Secret Zenyatta, but at least Zenyatta has a lot of fans, et cetera, et cetera. I wish they had found another race for her because Lay's Secret was a true great.
Yeah.
So, but I get that to a certain extent, whether I agree with it or not. But I mean, to change the ancient title, the insanity of Sprint Championship, give me a break.
Well, and in fact. It's the other way around.
Legendary California bread.
Exactly. And there's names, when there's names available that you can talk about in New York, there was that Belmont Sprint that became the John Nayrud. That's okay. Don't take a name of a historical figure and pave over it. I mean, the one that I always talk about is renaming the Hirsch Jacobs the Chick Lang, when you could have taken the Pimlico Sprint and named that the Chick Lang.
I agree.
Makes no sense.
Theme, but I agree. But everybody doesn't agree with us.
I got to ask.
Which is probably a good thing in the long run.
What about your poll? What's your opinion of where what's better for Knicks Go and Life is Good in the draw?
I think the best thing for Knicks Go in this race would be not to run. second to that, I really don't have an opinion. In theory, you would want to be outside of him, but I'm not sure he can be effective stalking him. And I don't think it matters inside of him, because I think Life is Good will clear him. But I mean, if Life is Good wasn't going to clear him, but then again, wouldn't you say, do you really want to be hounded by Life is Good? I'd probably vote for C and say, I don't really know. I put that poll up. I thought it was an interesting question, and it came out very close, right?
Yeah, it did.
Inside, I think, narrowly beat outside.
Yep.
And it was, you know, it was fairly well divided between the three. So I think the poll sort of shares the opinion that it's wide open.
36.1 said inside of Life is Good. 35.3 said outside Life is Good. And 28.6 don't think it matters.
Who am I giving money to at Churchill? The Churchill, what is it called?
The Backside Learning Center.
Backside Learning Center?
Yes.
Putting them on my list of places to give money to. Excellent. That's nice.
That is nice. I'm glad it's nice of you to do that.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's all that stuff's good. I think it's also obvious Sir Winston's going to win, right? Okay, he's not. I was kidding.
These two tower over.
I think Gunavera is coming back.
Okay.
I have absolutely no idea, but I did look at the noms and it wasn't pretty. Oh, the horse scratched out of the stake at Aqueduct this week.
Oh, yes.
Empty tomb. Move up from him and Sir Winston.
Oh, Chess Chief.
Well,
Chess Chief.
At least is a closer, so he could, you know, pick up some pieces.
Chess Chief is going to run.
Who is?
Chess Chief.
Okay, wow.
He's okay.
Really, now he's okay. I'm starting to get really excited. No wonder I was excited. That's it? That's the best we can come up with?
I'm only worried about those two. I mean, who's thinking about anything else?
Well, if only you got $675,000 for running last like you used to. Oh, wait. I want to know what the impetus was to, other than to have a charity for Peter Brandt and Chad Brown, what the reason for running the Pegasus for Girls was.
Pegasus
Surf Girls.
Can't tell you.
Isn't the Pegasus Surf Boys bad enough?
By the way, here's some other names. There's a chance that, you got Stiletto Boy, because there was that shipping issue yesterday. He's coming for Stiletto Boy.
He's a California horse, right?
Yes, he is.
What has he done recently?
He was in the, did he run in the San Antonio?
I don't know. I asked you. I mean, I could pull up the PPs off my computer, but. All right, I'm going to get really mean. I'm going to go to the computer and I'm going to look at who is your next guest?
Ned Toffee.
Who?
Ned Toffee from Spendthrift.
No, I just didn't hear what you said. I wasn't saying who is that. I don't hear you. Well, he should be on. Why are we wasting his time with this crap?
I'm waiting for Casey to let me know that we got him.
Okay, as soon as Casey gets him, please. We can end this idiotic conversation. Okay.
The Malibu was his last start.
It says the Fred Hooper presented by Hillendale Farms at Jalapa. That's what it says on the website, by the way.
There you go. That's Charlatan. They might be advertising Charlatan on Saturday.
Oh, well, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there is.
Okay. Coastal Defense coming off the 7th in the Sanity Handicap in March, coming off an 11-month layoff. Common Deer, who last won an allowance race at Churchill and has never run a stake. He did break his maiden in his fifth start. Empty Tomb, endorsed, recently claimed. He's in there. He's nominated, coming off a second, Mr. Prospector. Fearless for Todd Fletcher, I believe he's running. He's his comp a win in the Harlan's Holiday, Knicks go. Law Professor, an off the turf race. Are these horses running? Do we know?
I think so. I think so.
Shared Sense. He was a monstrous fourth recently in the Tenacious.
Yep.
Sir Winston. Secret Corner's not running, is he?
I don't think so.
He's listed as an invitee, Stiletto Boy, who was third in the Malibu.
Right.
Title Ready, who was sixth in some race at Oaklawn. December.
And Chess Chief. There you go.
War Stopper coming off of 5th in June in Salvador. Okay.
There's your Pegasus field.
I mean, I don't know. I imagine there are others that could sneak in late. The invites are all over the place.
Well,
Andy? Are you in Las Vegas, by the way?
I leave at 6 o'clock.
Wow. Now, you must be broadcasting every day for the weekend.
Yes, I am.
So you're on like a 15-day straight broadcasting or something. 12 straight days.
Pretty much, yes.
Pretty exciting.
I'm excited. Andy, I'm excited to come to the luncheon on Wednesday, August 17th, and congratulations again. I will talk to you. I'll be home next Tuesday, so I'll talk to you from home.
I'm sure we'll talk before then.
Exactly. Andy Serling, everybody, and the honoree for the New York Racetrack Chaplaincy. Ned Toffee is standing by to join us, and it's funny, we mentioned Chess Chief, and I happen to know that he's an Into Mischief himself, and Leslie's Lady, the topic, and no one farm has been more blessed by her largesse than Spendthrift. And Ned, I haven't yet had a chance to reach out to Fred Mitchell, but everybody that appreciates breeding just, in awe of what Leslie's Lady accomplished as a broodmare.
Yeah, she really has been a remarkable mayor, and anyone who doesn't know Fred, it's a real treat to get to know him. He's been a wonderful breeder, had a wonderful reputation as a breeder for many, many years. You know, you would go to the sale and still do, I should say, and see the stock that Fred turns out year after year. These are just big, well-grown, rugged individuals that Fred produces year in and year out. And so it's always a treat to go to his consignment. But obviously, Leslie's Lady has been particularly good to both Fred and to us, and we've really benefited from her. It's funny because when we bought Into Mischief at a 2-year-old in training sale, and if I remember right, I don't think Fred is the actual official breeder of Into Mischief. I think he acquired her shortly after Into Mischief came along, but. You know, at that time, when Into Mischief initially went to stud, one of the big knocks on him was that he didn't have enough pedigree, and obviously that pedigree is filled in rather nicely over the years, and so it's now one of the great selling points. But Into Mischief kind of kicked that off, for her to follow that up with Beholder and then Mendelssohn, just really remarkable. It shows you what a tough game this is, because she's had plenty of other very nice offspring, but they haven't amounted to anything like what those three have. And so for a mare to have three major horses that she's produced, there's a fair amount of failure in there too, but what she's done is nearly unprecedented as a producer, and her influence is going to reverberate through the breed for generations and generations, because you've got Into Mischief, you got all these sons of Into Mischief that are at stud, and you've got Beholder and her offspring, and of course Mendelssohn as well. So just an incredible impact that she has had, and we've been very fortunate to be the beneficiary of a lot of it.
Into Mischief was what, the second or I think second or third of her foals, and Harlan's Holiday. What actually, what was, do you recall, was the motivation? What did you like about him?
Yeah, so Into Mischief was bought at the March OBS 2-year-old in training sale, and Harlan's Holiday was from the first crop of Harlan's Holiday, and he was out of a mare at the time that had not distinguished herself, so it was a fairly ordinary pedigree, or at least appeared to be at the time, but he had a tremendous breeze. His breeze, and in particular his gallop out, was what everybody associated with it has always talked about it. I know Richard was there, Mandela was there that year helping us inspect yearlings, and Into Mischief as a, or I should say 2-year-olds. As a 2-year-old, he was not a physical that just blew you away, but he just had this tremendous workout. And I think the other thing that you saw early on is that he just had a great mind for racing. He's just very, very competitive, and so I think those are the things that. But that breeze was really what sold us on him, and then. We were fortunate enough to get him bought for $180,000 as a 2-year-old in training, we followed up with Beholder a couple of years later, and by this time Into Mischief was a Grade One winner at two. Beholder was by Henny Hughes, who was beginning to look like he may not make it as a stallion, and
right.
But we were fortunate enough that we had a very good appreciation for what Into Mischief was as a racehorse, even though he was a Grade One winner at two, he's still underachieved a little bit as a racehorse. So even though that grade one was there on the page, I think we had an even more of an appreciation for him than maybe other folks did. Beholder was such a stunning physical when we bought her at the yearling sale in September. With her, it was ironically the same price we paid. We paid $180,000 for her as a
two-year-old.
I think a lot of the pin hookers thought they were going to get a steal and were a little annoyed to see us standing there ready to bid on her. But again, we were fortunate enough to get her bought for a very, very, you know, what now looks like a bargain. And it was a very fair price at the time, we thought. And you know, we've been very fortunate to be involved in two of Leslie's ladies' three best offspring. And we were the underbidder on Mendelssohn. By then, the cat was out of the bag, and Mendelssohn was a $3 million yearling. And, Mr. Hughes bid $2.9 million and regretted not bidding more. But, we had a very determined competitor there in Coolmore, and they outbid us. And I don't know this, but, you know, we bid 2.9 and they bid 3. I suspect if we had bid 3.9, they'd have bid 4 and so on. So, but he was the son of Henny Hughes and out of and a half to Beholder and Into Mischief. And, timing is everything. By then, all that black type was there on the page, and Into Mischief was getting started. And people were beginning to recognize him by then as a special stallion. And so, I was wondering what would have happened if you reversed the order, if Beholder had come first, or maybe even Mendelssohn. I think we'd have paid $1.8 million instead of $180,000. You just add a zero to that $180,000, that's probably what we would have had to have paid for Into Mischief at the time. If the birth order had been different. But she's a remarkable mare, and again she is going to occupy a very prominent place in the stud book in America for generations to come.
And we'll hopefully tomorrow, I know that Sid will certainly flesh this out too, but there's parts of the story of Leslie's Lady herself that I'd love to tell. David Hager bred her to start the whole thing, and she herself, Tricky Creek, out of a Stop the Music mare, Crystal Lady.
Exactly. And it's certainly all good stuff, but it isn't necessarily the kind of stuff that you would look at and say, well, here's the next great influence on our breed. But it just sort of goes to show you that, really at the end of the day, we're all just playing genetic roulette, and you never really quite know where that next big horse is coming from. But, the tumblers aligned, and she turned out to be an incredibly special mare.
I saw that Tim Gleishaw was working for Bob Holtis at the time, and he talked about being at Hoosier when they sent her in for the Hoosier Deb, and which she won. I think that might have been her only stake win. She only won five times. She did make $187,000.
Certainly a competent, yeah. racehorse. But I'm not, generally, I would be, I'd be surprised if anybody in the stands that day at Hoosier said, "Well, there's the next great American blue hen."
Well, and that that's a part of this. Ned Toffee's with us from Spendthrift to appreciate what Leslie's Lady has done and the impact that she's going to have forever going forward. And Fred Mitchell and his late wife Nancy, they acquired her at Keeneland November for $100,000. It's funny because Sid and I have been talking about somewhat you know, modest, you know, the getting involved and breeding at you know, at a fairly modest level, and it just shows you where things can go. You know, and when you say Blue Hen, I mean, in terms of recent vintage, I would guess, you know, Tussaud and Urban Sea are the, you know, the international counterparts.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she clearly occupies the discussion that consists of a pretty short list of names just like that. Again, it's nearly impossible to predict where these horses are going to come from, and you just hope that you're lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time when they come. We all like to think that we're very good at this stuff, but there's an awful lot of luck involved.
For Beholder, and what, you know, what having, you know, both the, not to take away from Mendelssohn, but the, you know, arguably the best son and the best daughter, you know, what lessons are there for, you know, from Leslie's Lady in terms of pairing up Beholder?
Well, you know, it's an interesting one. I mean, you know, what worked historically, you know, and almost exclusively with Leslie's Lady was the Stormcat line, and so it leads you to the question: do we want to go back and double up on that and breed, because obviously Beholder as a daughter of Henny Hughes as a Stormcat line herself. But with Leslie Lady, obviously Harlan's Holiday, excuse me, Mendelssohn, it's all Stormcat stuff. So, you know, the question of going back to whether or not going back to that make the most sense. We really haven't done that. We've gone in other directions. And mostly just taking the approach that we've tried to breed her to the best stallions available to us. But there's a lot of different ways you can go, and you know, that clearly is what worked with Leslie's Lady over the years.
Well, and speaking of which, I think I just saw a picture. I think I just saw a picture of that Karen with an eye, working out the other day, didn't I?
Yes, she's with Richard, and she's in training, and she's had a couple little setbacks, but is just back in and training nicely. Richard's been very happy with her this time through, and so we'll start to get a. We'll start to get an idea of what she can do too here soon. You know, I remember a colt that we thought about buying and he just didn't vet for us. There was a Curlin, who's actually turned into Curlin the Mischief, who stands out in California. So he's
the unraced brother, the Spanish steps of stallions.
Exactly. And I will tell you, I remember him as a yearling. I can picture him like it was yesterday. He was one of the most spectacular yearlings, I think, that I ever saw at auction, and he would have sold for an awful lot of money, but he had a fairly lengthy list of x-ray related issues that you know, sometimes people are able to buy horses with those issues and work through them and have some success. In this horse's case, I don't know what all the issues were that stopped him, but he was not apparently not able to overcome those issues. But he was about as good looking as they make horses, and you know, he was you know, given a shot at stud out in California, and he's been a very useful regional sire so far. And now, you know, the fact that if not for some radiographic issues, that horse could might have been anything, because he was absolutely spectacular, and you know, obviously Beholder, you know, our best stallion these days is Into Mischief, so that's obviously not an option. So we've generally bred off the farm. We do have a very, very nice Bolt d'Oro filly that's just turned a year old, so we're very excited about her as well. So, but you know, it's interesting because these mares will, you know, you can go through a few tries in breeding, whether you're talking about breeding to a particular stallion or breeding a particular mare. There's always going to be, you know, there's always going to be some failure involved, and sure. That was certainly the case with Leslie's Lady, and I think. You know, that's one of this is definitely a game for people who are patient.
No doubt.
And I think that's one of the things that you really see with her, is that as remarkable and as long of a career as she had, you know, by some standards, you say, boy, there's a lot of failure in there. But again, she had three major horses, and which means that she had a lot that didn't work out.
Always.
And yet that standard of having three major stakes winners puts her in pretty rarefied air. And so I think that's something, you know, that we don't all think about, but you know, is very true. And even the best are going to have their share of failure. But you just hope that you're around for when you do have that success.
Well, you've been around, you're enjoying it, you got three fillies, and you got that gelding QB1 who is probably getting ready for a second start, and years of pleasure that Beholder and Into Mischief are providing for Spendthrift. Ned Toffee, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Not at all. Ned Toffee has spent with everybody. More about Leslie's Lady and her influence tomorrow with Sid. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, who's also sponsoring the Fred Hooper on Saturday. Ned Toffee, Andy Serling, Dr. Scott Palmer. If you missed that, you're going to want to catch it in its entirety, talking about the NYRA initiative with Stride Safe. And then the Hall of Fame announcement for NHC, Keith Shamblin, and then two of the inductees, Michael Bacek and David Goodfriend. And we'll talk to Paul Matisse and Stanley Bavlish in coming days as well. And tomorrow at this hour, we'll be coming to you from Vegas 21 hours from now. NHC 22. Good luck today, everybody, if you're playing. Talk to you in the morning from Bally's Event Center. NHC 22.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.